Mini episode 1728 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1728. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris coming at you. And we have a great guest on the program here today. It is our third time of welcoming him onto the FDH Lounge. The previous times were prior to the mini episode era, the episode era back at the old Sports Talk Network, episode number 54, April 15th, 2009, episode 149. So towards the end of our run there, May 11th, 2011. And I know on that occasion, we were talking to him about the NFL lockout at the time and the passing of Macho Man Randy Savage. And that is because, again, it is rare to find somebody who works at the top level in two different huge areas of American life here, as Alex does, professional football and professional wrestling. He is, of course, the longtime president, previously, of the Pro Football Writers of America. He's a Hall of Fame voter, a longtime writer and broadcast veteran for many big outlets, presently with SiriusXM. And on the wrestling side here, a longtime Scripps Howard syndicated columnist. And presently, you've seen him for the last half decade as a backstage interviewer and also working in production for All Elite Wrestling. And so what an opportune time to talk to him about both the NFL schedule release that happened last week, get some of the thoughts on that, as well as taking a look at the forthcoming pay-per-view here this weekend, Double or Nothing coming from Las Vegas. So for all that and much more, we bring on the great Alex Marvez. Alex, thank you so much for being with us here today, sir.
Rick, you know, first I need to hire you as my publicist because that was absolutely fantastic. So thank you very much for that. Second, I don't know where 13 years went since the last time I was on, but it is an honor to be back. And third, it just struck me, half a decade of All Elite Wrestling.
How about that?
I mean, it's insane. And we're going back to the MGM where it all began for us. I mean, and you know, I'm getting a little nostalgic myself, and I'm not a nostalgic type of person, but it does give you pause to look back at this little upstart company and how quickly it has grown. The most successful upstart in the history of pro wrestling. Kudos to Tony Khan and all of the great people who worked there who helped put this thing together. And I mean, I think we're just scratching the surface of the places that we're going to end up getting to, which makes it even more excited. But let's talk some NFL NFL schedule, and let's talk some AEW.
Absolutely. And as per the period of time since we had you on, I must simultaneously thank the FDH New York Bureau for reaching out to you, as I also chuckle about the fact that I think he had lost your contact info for a period of time. So the good Lord giveth, the good Lord taketh away. Right, Alex?
But understood.
But, oh, it's so good to have you back on and to be talking about this. Again, both of these areas of great interest on this show. This is the show where nothing is off topic. But, again, if you look at the old pie chart, NFL, pro wrestling, and TV reviews and talk about some of the top shows on TV. Those would occupy the three biggest spots, certainly, in our list of things that we go through. So we're going to hit two of them here today. And as you said, the NFL, you've got what's very interesting to me, you've got a parallel situation here going on, I think, presently with what we're seeing with the NBA and how that finishes shaking out with Warner Media. Obviously, that's going to impact AEW with their upcoming TV negotiations. But these networks are all paying for more and getting less. We hear about shrinkflation in this economy, and usually it's about a bag of Cheetos or something like that, but it happens every TV deal. Every TV deal that comes out, the NFL, the NBA, any of these entities, it's the best one they've ever had, and it's the worst one that the networks ever had, and they're paying more and more for it. And I say that in the prism of looking at the Christmas game and the carve-out that Netflix ended up getting here. Now, I know that the inventory did increase for the networks when they went to 17 games, and it'll increase more on the inevitable stop at 18 games. So, yes, they are getting more weeks of games here, but it's really, really interesting. I don't remember it being talked about much at the time of the last TV deals, that the NFL could keep slicing it thinner and thinner and thinner here, just getting some of these other bidders into the process. The Christmas games, the last 2 years, the pilot project, if you want to call it that, but we're at a full-blown commitment now, Alex, because if they're going to do the games on a Wednesday, then this is a permanent feature. Netflix is going to have them for the next 3 years. I guess they're going to be sharing in 2025 with Amazon since it'll fall on a Thursday. But this new thing with Netflix, this brave new world of going to streaming, the NFL is just, you know, when they were willing to put one of the playoff games last year, one of the wild card games on Peacock, it was a sign that there were basically no restrictions from their point of view on where they were prepared to go to make an extra buck on moving the TV rights.
Yeah, well, I mean, a number of things here. I mean, this is really just the tip of the iceberg in terms of the NFL looking to the future. And the future, unfortunately, in a lot of ways, may not be cable television, may not be satellite television. It may be all streaming. I can't blame the NFL whatsoever for trying to parcel out its product, whether it's, you know, just the individual cost of a game that they're able to get from a streaming service. You know, we were talking $90 million a game last year, I think, from Peacock, split among all 32 NFL owners and the money trickling down to the players. But I think, too, and, you know, Rick, it's if you're of a certain age, I think this bothers you. I think if you're of a younger age, I think you're fine with it because you're probably already streaming your product anyway, to be quite candid. And these services are just commonplace for you. It's like, no big deal. Okay, I'm going to watch Peacock tonight. I already have Peacock. I'm going to watch Amazon Prime. I already have Amazon Prime. I already have Netflix. I already have ESPN Plus. I mean, that's the thing. And for people who aren't from that world, who don't want to stream or can't stream or simply don't want to pay the money to stream, I mean, it's offensive to them. But when I looked at the demographics of what the NFL did in its wild card game last year with the Dolphins and the Chiefs and how young that whole game skewed, I mean, this is what the NFL wants. Viewers 18 to 49. That is the target demographic of basically every entertainment product. That's what the NFL is aiming at. And more people between the ages of 18 and 49 are streaming the product. I'm with you. I think that the networks, when they signed on, I don't know if they could have envisioned this, but I think some of them did. Let's be candid here. If you're a Peacock, you have the NBC affiliation, you're already carrying Sunday Night Football.
Right.
If you're ESPN, you're already carrying games like this. Mm-hmm. So it's CBS and Fox, I think, that, and obviously they're trying their venue, you know, endeavor to try to start streaming games. But I sort of see, I just think this is just what the future is going to look like for the National Football League.
Yeah, it is definitely the future, no question about it. And again, and I'll just speak for myself, I would be able to see games like this last year just off of, because it was the first year that Red Zone was available through NFL Plus. So I got NFL Plus primarily to watch Red Zone, but they would throw in all these special nationally televised games. Didn't miss any of them that way. And then Thursday nights, the funny thing is, it's one of these things that Amazon does, and they don't go out of their way to call attention to it, but they put all the games on Twitch. So I always tell people, like, if even if you don't have Amazon Prime, you can just watch it on Twitch. You can hook your tablet up to your TV the way that I do, or watch it on NFL Plus. But there are different ways to be able to watch this, and we're not talking about, you know, hitting, you know, Pirate Bay or anything like that, but there are different ways to be able to watch these games that are not illicit, that are even outside of the one way that people think that they have to watch these games.
Correct. What I would do, quite honestly, at times, and this is also because my sleeping hours are crazy with these jobs, was I would just wait, you know, I would DVR at an NFL network. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, I'd get up at 4:35 in the morning, and I would start the game. I would turn my head away from the TV. Uh-huh. I would begin to fast forward, and I would watch a replay on NFL Network, and I wouldn't know what the score is because they don't put the score at the bottom of the game. So, okay. So by the time, you know, the sun is rising, I've been able to, you know, watch the game because I watch football on DVR anyway. I don't have the attention span anymore, honestly, mm-hmm. to watch a product that's 3+ hours.
Sure.
I mean, the starting and stopping is just killing me, and having to watch basically at least a piece of 272 games in a regular season, I have to use my time judiciously.
Yeah.
So I find it a more comfortable experience doing it like that. Hey, you know, there's different ways, you're right, to be able to watch these things. I think NFL Plus is a pretty darn good bargain, to be honest, especially with all the games that come with it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, for some fans, you know, look, they're going to say, when is enough enough?
Sure.
You know, and of course, there's always the pointing of the finger at the NFL. Agreed. You know, how much are you going to shake out of us because we love this game, we're hooked on this game. The question, too, is when does it come to a tipping point? Does America ever get tired of football? And I don't think it will, but you know what? America got tired of baseball a while ago.
Yeah.
And it used to be the pastime in this country in the 1960s, and something else came along. You know, so that's why I think the NFL, again, so intent on trying to keep younger people in tune with the game. Think about the blitz on Nickelodeon.
Mm-hmm.
No pun intended.
Yeah.
Of getting, you know, fans who are 8, 10, 12 years old, the slime games and things like that. They know for the lifeblood of the game, if they want to continue to expand the revenues the way they have and go worldwide, this is the way that they need to go.
That is true. And they are gaining new fans through these different venues, no question about it. Now, having said that, as you and I both indicated here, that the networks may or may not have been anticipating this when they signed their last deals, but my sense is, and you would know better being, you know, deep inside the football media here, but my sense, more or less from the outside looking in, was that everybody seemed happy enough with what they had. NBC, CBS, Fox, it didn't seem to me like anybody was necessarily putting on a brave face about the games that they ended up getting. Did you get the sense that at the end of the day that the NFL seemed to be able to keep all of their rights holders at least relatively happy with the offerings for 2024?
You get that feeling, right? Because remember a couple years ago, you had the Thursday Night Partner,
yeah,
Amazon, very upset about that first season and the slate of games,
yep,
that they received. It's also one of the reasons, too, that Roger Goodell ramrodded the possibility of flexing out Thursday Night games, which is an absolute nightmare,
mm-hmm,
for everyone in the league involved in terms of travel arrangements, in terms of the rest that goes with it, all that. But they wanted that flexibility just in case they got stuck with the dog of a Thursday Night game when trying to build this schedule. So I'm with you on that. Remember, too, there's also that right of first refusal type things. I mean, you know, because it's that flip side of, oh, well, why isn't this game in prime time, Buffalo, Kansas City? Well, because you're throwing a bone to one of the network partners,
mm-hmm,
by letting them have that game. You know, Dallas and Philadelphia, neither game is in prime time. They're going to air on regular, you know, over the air television, you know, Fox or CBS. I mean, I'm not sure which ones, but the point is they're not in prime time. They're not streaming. So the bulk of the games, I mean, to be honest with you here, probably, what, 250-plus games,
mm-hmm,
are airing on free TV in some form or fashion. When I say free, you know what I'm saying. You know,
right.
CBS, Fox, NBC, et cetera. So that's why I think, too, for everything's involved. Look, when you're talking that many games and all the things that you have to do to try to make sure that the schedules are also equal, I mean, it's a tough job. You know, you're not talking like the 1976 Raiders that played six straight games on the road,
yeah,
after their season opener.
Mm-hmm.
You're trying to keep the schedules all equitable and, you know, trying to not create a competitive balance for any team. Don't tell the Pittsburgh Steelers that because they've got their six division games in the final eight games of the season and the Eagles and the Chiefs sprinkled in there as well.
Yes.
But you get my point. So I think they did a real nice job with it, and I'm excited to see the schedule that's going to unfold.
Yeah, I thought it came out pretty well from their point of view as far as what they were able to do with, again, keeping everyone happy. Some inequalities here and there with different teams, but you're always going to have that. And I will say, too, I was very interested to take note that the Houston Texans are going to have a much higher profile next year. And it's kind of interesting because I think the NFL folks had alluded to the fact that they had not, and like a lot of people, they were sort of caught by surprise of Houston doing more last year. The funny thing is, I thought Houston was going to be better than people thought. I thought most of that division was going to be better than people thought, but Houston certainly exceeded my expectations. But you look at it now, like Oklahoma City, Minnesota, and the NBA, they weren't really on national TV much this past year. I think that's going to change next year. So I see it with Houston where, you know, they're trying to latch on to these teams that are really on the rise. And Houston, one of the things that I track assiduously over the years is how they do filling the holes on their roster. And they were a team that were pretty depleted about 2-3 years ago. And then step by step by step, I mean, C.J. Stroud, everybody will point to the obvious thing, and that is maybe the most important part of it. But they have really done such a great job of filling the holes on that roster through and through. And they're a team that the networks clearly see is on the come up, and they want to have a piece of that. And That was, you know, you've got them, you've got the Jets being factored very heavily in there, especially early on with Aaron Rodgers. So there were some teams that really, now the Jets, that's no different than last year. It's just the Jets ended up being a big turd after Rodgers went down and the networks had to eat it. But there are some clearly some teams outside of the usual mix of, you know, Dallas, Green Bay, Kansas City, whatever, that the networks are thinking are going to bring them some ratings this year.
Well, and think about this, too. Las Vegas, yes. Only one primetime game. Uh-huh. They're the Raiders.
Yep.
They got Antonio Pierce. I mean, this is a fun team. But you know what you notice, too, about the scheduling? Think about how quarterbacks are involved. Maybe had the Raiders taken, like, let's say they had traded up, yep, and gotten Michael Penix Jr.
Yeah.
Maybe they've got a few more primetime games, right? Instead, as it stands right now, they got the Black Friday game against Kansas City. And they play a late season, I think, Sunday night game. But that's it, you know? I mean, so I think what the NFL's done, too, and this has been really important, is to try to raise the level of competition among teams. They are no longer giving you a primetime game if you're not a good team from the previous year, or they don't think you're going to be better. Carolina, no primetime games.
Yeah.
Washington, one primetime game. Remember back in the day, you know, you had 10 Jags games a year when the team was bad. I mean, you know, 10 years of it is what I'm saying.
Sure.
I mean, there was just every year they were guaranteed this type of game, and that's not the case anymore. There's, yeah, competition for a primetime slot, but flex scheduling makes it so much better, too. If you're a surprise team, you can find a way to get on there. Same thing at the end of the season when, you know, the dates aren't necessarily set for week 17 and week 18. You can get that window exclusive contest, you know, in the NFL. I mean, I'm not sure about seeing Atlanta four times in primetime, and that's little bit to me,
right?
But maybe they think they're going to be better. You know, I don't, you know, again, it's a lot of it is projection, and some of it sometimes too is stadium availability.
Mm-hmm.
What is available for you that particular week? Sometimes you don't have the stadium available due to, you know, things happening locally, whether it's a concert or whether it's just a you know, an event in the area that may not allow you to have it there.
Well, you know, and it is funny with what you're saying about Las Vegas, because I agree with you that on the surface, you'd expect them to be playing more games in prime time. But it's a thing where, and I sort of kind of feel like a hipster with the way I'm looking at the Raiders right now. But then again, I was with Washington a year ago. I thought Washington was going to be the dumpster fire nobody saw coming because I just thought there was too many holes on that roster. I feel the same way about Las Vegas right now. I got them 30th in my power rankings. Carolina 31. I can see why they're not showing up very much. But the Giants 32. Sometimes, wow, market size will trump that, Alex, because they're going to be playing on Thanksgiving. So even if the Giants are as bad as I think they're going to be, somehow or another, they think Giants-Cowboys is still going to translate. I'm dubious that it's going to draw the same numbers on Thanksgiving as the last couple of years. But, I mean, look, if the Giants are bulletproof ratings-wise on Thanksgiving, despite being in the crapper where I expect them to be with Danny Dimes, then I guess market size does trump everything.
Well, I mean, it's the Cowboys, too.
Sure.
And, you know, I remember, was it about 10 years ago? I think there was a game where the Cowboys weren't very good that season, mm-hmm, and they played Atlanta, and it ended up being the number one rated game of the season.
Yeah.
It was just a very bizarre thing, but people tune into the Cowboys. And remember, too, that's destination programming. I mean, we all realize that the Dallas Cowboys are playing at 4:30 p.m. Eastern time on Thanksgiving Day. That is just, we're all, you know, Pavlov's dogs. And the NFL rings a bell. They can put any team against the Dallas Cowboys, and they're going to draw a humongous audience just because it's that type of destination game. But that's interesting about the Giants. See, I have the Patriots in that bottom three or four.
Okay.
I look at that roster, and yeah, I'm like, geez, Louise, you know? I mean, but I think that's intentional to a point because I really think that they're looking more ahead to 2025 after Drake May has had a second, you know, we'll be going into a second season,
sure,
getting some experience this year, let Gerard Mayo feel out this team and go from there, because I just look at them and I'm like, this team still isn't very good. I know they can play good defense, you know, and that's something you expect as a hallmark of the Patriots. It's still going to continue in the post-Belichick era, but New England, and we're not going to see them a heck of a lot in primetime either. Just one primetime game. Who could have thunk that 6 years ago, even toward the tail end of the Brady era?
Exactly, and I'll tell you, now my thoughts on New England, I do have them 29th, so I'm pretty close to where, okay, you think of them. But, well, here's the thing, though. I have sort of a nuanced view of that roster, because I look at their holes, and you know, tight end, outside linebacker, cornerback, I would say, like, and they drafted a lot of guys in the draft that would basically, like, fill holes. I just wasn't necessarily impressed with that much, so it's like, they I don't see a lot of holes on the roster, but nor do I see standouts. Like, normally a winning team, you know, you're going to be close to filling your 22 spots, right? But a winning team, you're going to have maybe 6 to 8 superstars out of that. Maybe a little better if you're a truly great team. But it's like, for New England, you know, they might have 19 out of 22 spots filled. I just don't see anybody that's causing any beer to spill down at the old VFW hall. You know what I mean?
Right. And, you know, still, the wide receiver position, who's a difference maker?
Yeah.
For you on this team? I mean, there isn't.
Right.
You know, that's it. And that's a big deal.
Right.
I mean, to me, maybe Javon Baker, you know, former Alabama player, finished up at UCF. Maybe he'll be that guy. Jalen Pope, maybe he's a guy who was overlooked because he played at Washington and they had so much talent with Roma Dunze there. And, you know, maybe he'll end up being a guy. And I know that Pop Douglas showed some things as a rookie before he got hurt. Kendrick Bourne, I think the concept of Kendrick Bourne is better than the reality of Kendrick Bourne. And I just don't know if Juju Smith-Schuster is ever going to get it together. But I look at this receiving core and I'm like, you know what I mean?
Right.
I look at the offensive line, limited depth,
yep.
And you know that you need some there. I mean, again, though, but look, no one's expecting the Patriots to be a world beater in 2024, thus the limited primetime exposure.
Well, yeah, they're getting what they deserve, essentially, as far as what the roster shows. Now, something that I want to ask you, and this is sort of a survey question that we have put out over a period of time here with some folks from the media, former players, et cetera. I'm just interested in collating kind of the responses here. So I'll say up front, no wrong answers here. I just want to kind of see where people go with this. And that being the notion of what Mike Martz brought to the NFL, and again, not to be Mr. Ahistorical guy and act like there was no, you know, Mouse Davis or June Jones or whatever, but I feel like Mike Martz more or less put the spread on the map, sort of, you know, with the greatest show on turf. I mean, all things being equal, I guess I would single out him. And I don't feel like we've seen a similar thing on the defensive side of the ball. So the question that I just want to put out, the kind of blue sky question here, wherever you want to go with it, is we get a defensive guy in the league that's sort of the equivalent of that. What do you think it might look like? I know that some of the answers I've gotten in, some folks have thought that it might be maybe a little bit more sort of positionless football than we're seeing. There was one answer that was sort of radically more positionless than we're seeing. But, like, what do you think on the defensive side of the ball we might potentially see at some point that we really haven't seen previously to try to cope with what these offenses are doing?
Yeah, I think the positionless football is a very big deal. I mean, because you see the adjustments every year. I mean, and you know, listen, there's still teams that value the edge rusher in their defense as much as anything, you know. But, I mean, the interior pressure now, I think teams realize just how key that is to success. Now, finding great interior pass rushers is not easy. But you just wonder, because there's such a need for them, will we start to see more of them emerge in future years, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and think about the game, too, as it evolves on the offensive side of the ball. Now, teams are simply going to have to continue to adapt, because you have so much at the high school level, you know, of the 7-on-7, you know, year-round football, all passing, quarterbacks, wide receivers. As you know, Rick, it used to take a year or two for a wide receiver once they got into the NFL to really, you know, find their way. Now players are making an instant impact. There isn't that type of waiting period. But I just think that positionless thing is so important. Like, I can't begin to tell you during all the scouting stuff that I do, you know, leading into the draft and after, you know, can play safety, can play nickel, can play corner.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those types of players are so valuable, or even break down into the linebacker spot. But I think, too, when we start talking too much about the secondary, that the pendulum shifts back on offense to running the football.
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to get some real grinded out teams right now that are just going to bludgeon the heck out of you? You know, Arthur Smith, I think to a point, wanted to do that with the Atlanta Falcons and had his positionless football, but just never had the quarterback to be able to really pull it off. Like a real difference-making quarterback. He never developed Desmond Ridder into what he thought he could be. And, of course, Marcus Mariota, that was a mess. And, you know, you understand where I'm coming from with this. But that's a great question. I mean, maybe it just doesn't lend itself to it. I don't know. I mean, the days of Bill Arnsparger, right?
Yeah.
When he started using all these different fronts and things like that, the 5-3, and just, you know, Bob Matheson in his linebacker spot, that was something that really changed things. His zone blitz, that
mm-hmm.
changed things.
Yep.
But teams ultimately adjusted. Great question. I know there's a story at The Athletic that's actually on my cachet to read,
mm-hmm.
like my list, about Mike McDonald and how teams are copying his defense of what he did with the Ravens. So I'm gonna definitely, after we're done with this, finally check that story out. It's been on my waiting list.
Oh, okay.
But I got to do it after you ask this question.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, this is it's a question that always gets very thought-provoking answers like the one that you just gave, and that's why I enjoy it so much. I think we'll probably do a mini-episode at some point that is nothing but a compilation of the answers and just kind of put them all side by side, because everybody has really spoken on this so well, and it's one of those things, you know, nobody sees the world exactly the same way as, you know, somebody else, so there's always different shadings, even when some of you are more focused on positionless football or this area or that area. Sometimes the nuances in your answers are a little bit different, and that's what makes it so great. And to be able to segue there to what is basically the manifestation of modern pro wrestling, and I think in my opinion here, I'm somebody that really is a homer for the product, and somebody who is a preferer of pro wrestling over sports entertainment. I know that the Fed is trying to pivot away from sports entertainment, but I don't see that matching the reality of it here. I always tell my friends, if you want to see the best of what's going on in pro wrestling today, it would be with AEW. You have this pay-per-view coming up this weekend, Double or Nothing, and it's one of those things where, again, I know there are some challenges there. I know that in the growing pains of, as you said before, a startup company, probably more of those, at least from the outside looking in, it has seemed like in the last 2 years than the 3 years previously, but the company always manages to put on a strong pay-per-view effort, notwithstanding whatever challenges are there, and certainly the injury list right now is one of them. Just off the top of my head, Britt Baker, Adam Cole, MJF, Jamie Hayter, Kenny Omega, Eddie Kingston, Jeff Hardy, Juice Robinson, Mark Davis, Tay Mello, not injured, but you know what I mean on that one. But it seems to me you could probably go into the CW network and probably get a show if that was the core of a federation that you had, right? You could get a TV show with that bunch alone centering it, Alex.
Yeah, no, I know. And there are some challenges like that, but we deliver.
Yeah.
I don't know if anyone can say that they bought an AEW pay-per-view show and say they didn't get their money's worth. I really believe that. There's always going to be incredible matches. I feel like we've done some really nice storytelling going into, you know, what's coming up at Double or Nothing on a variety of different levels.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether it's the Elite and their challenge against Team AEW, that's coming up, the affront to All Elite Wrestling Management, if you will. I think there's a lot of interest around Orange Cassidy and Trent Beretta, the two best friends, no longer the case, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Mercedes Moné making her debut after being out for more than a year with her leg injury that was career-threatening, fortunately. She's been working her way back into the ring through a lot of training. She's been posting video of that. And her against Willow Nightingale has been an absolute epiphany in the AEW women's division. I mean, there's just a little bit of something there for everybody. That's the thing I think.
Yep.
Cody Rhodes was the one who described it, right, Rick? Smorgasbord wrestling,
mm-hmm.
you know, is probably what AEW is. And that's what I feel we are. I feel like we deliver a great product. And
yes.
when you spend your money as a fan, and we know it's hard-earned money, that you're gonna enjoy for 4 hours. And I just say, too, for some folks, don't live, like, on the internet constantly, obsessing over little things.
Sure.
They're minutia.
Sure.
That's it. Don't hate watch. That's an expression I learned from Bubba Ray Dudley when listening to Busted Open Radio.
Uh-huh.
When people would just tune in to pick apart the product.
Right.
You know, we have enough people in this industry, you know, trying to live off of our product.
Sure.
By doing podcasts and things like that, just, you know, bringing out every little negative thing in their opinion. And I just don't think that's any way to go through life.
No, it's
you know,
not.
I mean, try to enjoy the good stuff.
Sure. And that's where I will say I find a bit of irony in that, because from a decent amount of the stuff that he says, I know he's a fellow SiriusXM colleague, but it seems like Bubba Ray hate watches the product a decent amount from time to time. I don't know, but that's just my impression of it that I get. But, I mean, that's good advice, though, is not to do that. And that's where, again, you know, I don't really, you know, I'll sort of, you know, pick and choose the little slivers where I'll watch any of the Feds stuff, because I don't want to be hate watching stuff. Life is too short. You know what I mean? So, you know, you guys have, as you said, a tremendous product. And to get a little bit nerdy with this next, you know, point that I'm going to make here, one of the measures that I think whenever I look at a card is, and I know this is being billed as a triple main event of, you've got Team AEW versus the Elite in the Anarchy in the Arena match, Mercedes Moné versus Willow for the TBS title, and then Swerve and Cage for the world title. It's being billed as a triple main event. But I always look at it like, and especially a federation like AEW, whenever you guys do a pay-per-view, with what you guys have to work with, I always feel like you've got your main event, and there should be a minimum of at least four matches that I think you could pass as semi-main events. That's always one of the ways that I judge something. So you got three matches right there that would be above that bar, certainly, of the five matches that I'd be looking for to be at least semi-main event caliber. And I would say that you probably have two more on the card here that I know the whole deal with the BCC and Callis's family. That's a relatively newer kind of angle, but still, anytime the IWGP title's on the line, I think that's got to be at least a semi-main. So Mox and Takeshita, I'm going to give that one the check mark. And Copeland and Black in the barbed wire cage match for the TNT title. Again, barbed wire cage match, that lifts it to semi-main for me. So I think you guys have done that. Notwithstanding all the injuries, notwithstanding having a whole bunch of your talent packed into the Anarchy in the Arena match, I think you've still got five matches that anybody should look at as being semi-main event or main event.
Well, and, you know, it's interesting because I like Will Ospreay and Roderick Strong. Mm-hmm. Then again, I like Will Ospreay and I like Roderick Strong.
Yep.
I mean, these guys always deliver. And yep. This may be the match that we're sleeping on the most just because of the other matches that you mentioned.
Yep.
And, you know, look, anytime Toni Storm wrestles, I'm always entertained.
Sure.
And I think her and Serena Deeb, and, you know, let's be candid here. There was an injury to Yuka Sakazaki that, you know, changed the trajectory of where some things were going in the women's division because Serena was embroiled in a feud with her, and then Yuka went down, and that changed some things. And as you mentioned, we have some other talent on the shelf that isn't clear to wrestle quite yet. So, you know, I still think it's going to deliver as a great match, and I'm so proud of Serena, who has overcome so much to get back into a top spot at AEW. I think the buildup for the match has been solid, so I don't want to sleep on that one. And, you know, Chris Jericho, the learning tree. Hey, we got an FPW winner here, whether it's Hook, whether it's Shibata. You know, Brian Keith, there's going to be that big match at Dynamite on Wednesday from Bakersfield, California, and then the winner of that match goes on to face Chris Jericho for the FTW title, and I think Chris Jericho's done it once again. He has reinvented himself in a big-time way with a new type of approach to pro wrestling, and I have found it very, very, very amusing what he has done. So, you know, you got those nine matches, and then I don't even know what's on the 0 hour yet.
Yeah,
like, you know, we're going to put three bangers on there probably as well. So it's just a great night of wrestling. And I do think that it's neat that it's become a tradition at AEW. You just know the Memorial Day weekend.
Yep.
This is our time to shine. And I think we will.
It is. And you know what? And I'm so glad you singled out the Strong and Ospreay match, because that's one where I didn't list it among the other ones simply because of the notion that again, and I've long been a proponent of Roderick Strong, and who isn't of Will Ospreay right now? Arguably the best in the world. So, I mean, you've got that going for you. What I find to be interesting with Roderick Strong is I feel like, to me, when you're talking about the top tier of pro wrestlers in the 21st century, you know, you've got Danielson, you've got Styles, you've got Omega, you've got whoever on there. I certainly think Roderick Strong is on that list. One of the things, if you would want to say a rap about him or whatever, was, you know, does he have the personality and the promos to go with the in-ring stuff? So what's interesting is he was known for so long primarily in-ring. I feel like over the course of the last year, it's been primarily the character work, and he's really shown that he has that and can bring it. But it's one of those things where, you know, the way sometimes it goes with the cowardly heel. So sometimes your ring skills don't always appear at the forefront. I think this match can really be something that I'm guessing in a losing effort. I'm gonna paraphrase Mean Gene's sly tongue-in-cheek thing at WrestleMania 9 about who they're betting on at the casinos. But you know, the smart money is not on Roderick Strong coming out with the title, shall we say? But this is a thing where I think in defeat, potentially, I think he could really be elevated, because let me tell you something. With all due respect to the amazing all-time matches that Ospreay has had with Danielson, and as had with Takeshita, there's a chance this is the best of the three. And it's, how remarkable is it to say that? But there's a non-zero chance this is the best match Ospreay's had yet in AEW. And maybe this catapults Roderick Strong to being the full spectrum franchise player I've always seen him as being.
I really hope so. You know, and I think Roderick's done a great job since he's come back and, you know, teamed up now, obviously, Undisputed Kingdom. And, you know, because I'm a big fan of Taven and Bennett. I think those guys work so hard, and I think they've become a really interesting trio. And we're just really scratching the surface of all of this. Because let's not forget, once Adam Cole recovers from that leg injury, and he's working his tail off to come back, once he's able to return to the ring, I mean, it just opens up so many different areas that this can go, right? And just some great storytelling is going to be coming up, I think, with Adam Cole. He, you know, again, we know he's the leader of the Undisputed Kingdom, but you know how leadership goes in pro wrestling. A lot of times people try to knock that leader off the throne. So who knows where this is going to end up going with Roderick Strong. But I'm excited about that match. And I just think Will Ospreay has just added so much juice to AEW. I mean, his wrestling is fantastic. His promos have been great. You could tell that the passion is there. And he just loves being with this company. And you just, you feel it, you know, and you feel it backstage. And, you know, you just appreciate what Will Ospreay is bringing to the table. He has done nothing but deliver during his time with AEW. And I'm excited to see what comes next for him. You know, first a Double or Nothing, and then after.
Yes, yes. He is absolutely, absolutely amazing. And getting to see him at Wembley again later in this summer is just going to be incredible. And I think in looking at this here, as you start to get these guys coming off the sidelines here with all the health issues for however long it takes some of them, but certainly by the point you get to later in the year, I would guess that some, if not all, of the names I mentioned previously would be back. And this is one of these things where, too, with all of the hyper-focus, like you said before, you know, negativity on the internet and everything like that, people focusing on ratings, the notion is it's a different business model than it was a couple of years ago, because a couple of years ago it was just the quarterly pay-per-views. There's going to be 8 of them this year. So there are just a lot of matches that you could throw out there on TV. One of the most famous segments I remember you ever being in was at the end of the Moxley and Omega, the title change match, Winter is Coming. And again, in this day and age, that would have been saved for pay-per-view. But at that point in time, you just did it on free TV. So it's a matter of, as you get these guys back, that's going to be, I think, more big matches on TV, as well as, you know, having to save some matches for pay-per-view, just because your depth at the top is going to be that much better.
I agree with you. And I do want to say something about ratings. And I understand, you know, we're going inside baseball here.
Sure.
But AEW, when you look at our numbers, the way we're performing compared to other products, we're still doing fantastic. Like, it's just, you know, listen, cable television is eroding. We're one of the things that's keeping people's eyes to cable television.
Yep.
And, you know, that's a very big deal. And, you know, look, sports has rebounded in a big way. As you know, there was that dip in the NBA, the NFL, you know, et cetera. Those sports have come back roaring, and they draw a lot of the same demographic is AEW. And let's not forget, too, it's not like you only have to tune in on Wednesday now to see All Elite Wrestling. You know, through the years, we add Rampage. We add Collision. You know, for those who want to, like, see more wrestling, we have Ring of Honor. I mean, there's a lot of AEW-related product out there. So, you know, yeah, we would love to be able to pull in huge numbers. And I think that, you know, in time, people are going to continue to tune in, and those numbers are going to go up. But the sky is not falling for our company. People are still buying our pay-per-views. People are still interested in the product. Every day we're announcing a new commercial-type deal that's making us even more mainstream. So, I mean, look, I understand I'm an employee of the company. I understand, you know, I'm a huge Tony Khan fan as a human being, as a friend, as my boss. But I'm just saying, look at this for real. You know what I mean?
Yep.
It's not the end of the world where we're going. We are doing okay, and we're going to end more than okay. We're going to continue to do more than okay.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I mean, and I'll say it for you. I think that it's at a point where it is going to start to climb again. Everything is cyclical. You get the guys who are going to be coming back, the excitement off of that and everything like that. You heard it here first. Even that part of it is going to be coming back to augment all the other great things that are going that way business-wise. To bring it full circle here, the FDH New York Bureau also made me a promise to ask you your thoughts on the Iron Claw, which it was now that it's on HBO Max, or not now, I'm just Max, I guess it would be. But having seen it in the theater, you know, that was a thing where, obviously, again, guys like me and you, right, we could sit there and make a drinking game out of all of the heinous inaccuracies. But, I mean, I was very entertained by it. People talk about how bad the Ric Flair impersonation was in that, and I'll co-sign on it. But I just thought, as a nerdy wrestling fan, whoever played Harley Race, like, nailed it right down to the whole thing of just that, like, he had that verbal tick of saying human being in his promos. No human being, no living human being on this planet. So somehow they got the Harley Race part right, even if the Ric Flair part was wrong. But what were your thoughts on it, Alex?
I mean, essentially, this wasn't even like a wrestling movie to a degree. Mm-hmm. This was a father-son movie.
Yes.
is really what it was. And wrestling was just, you know, a malaprop, I guess is what we would call it, if I'm not mistaken.
Sure.
I mean, it's essentially using pro wrestling as a way to explain this relationship between a father and the way that he treated his kids. And, you know, we had one of them who survived.
Yeah.
You know, that type of relationship. So I just feel like it wasn't a wrestling movie. Like, I'm with you. Like, you could point out all these things that they, you know, were inaccurate historically, but they didn't care. It's also one of the reasons I don't watch documentaries. I don't watch a lot of stuff like that because history gets rewritten. And right. People, you know, it's just not accurate, some of the things. I saw that with some of the Ricky Williams stuff that came out. I lived through Ricky Williams mm-hmm. with the Miami Dolphins. And when I saw some of the stuff, I'm like, wait, is that the same thing that I did every single day for years of my life, covering Ricky Williams? And you're trying to say this happened when, no, it really wasn't like that. So I think that's why, you know, for wrestling fans, if you were looking for an absolutely, you know, 100% historically accurate movie, no. If you were looking for something that, you know, again, talked father-son relationships and just how, you know, tortured that situation was with the Von Erichs, then this is the type of movie for you. I think some of the acting was fantastic in this movie. And you know what it does too, honestly? It does mainstream pro wrestling, which I can't argue about because I just love the fact that maybe as time goes on, it becomes just more accepted among people as a legitimate form of entertainment, and maybe it brings more eyeballs to television sets as well. And don't forget too, AEW has a run of shows coming up in Arlington, Texas.
Yep.
For Collision. And, you know, maybe, just maybe, since every time we seem to run a show in Texas, some members of the Von Erich family show up, maybe, just maybe, we can do the same thing again.
That would be awesome. It's always great to be able to see them on there. I know that was happening at about the time that the movie was in the theaters. You're absolutely right that it's coinciding with the movie being on Max relatively recently. So, yeah, you guys have always had your tie-ins. Seems like you get more of them in the summer sometimes anyway, some of the tie-ins with Max, just seasonally. Although winter is coming, that was another one, obviously, as well. But, again, so much great stuff happening with you guys there, and I look forward to seeing. Whenever you get into the summer, and, of course, you know, you got the great Forbidden Door pay-per-view coming up in June, and then all of the excitement of All In at Wembley and leading into the fall, you got All Out after that, and then for my money, the best TV shows of the year, the week of Grand Slam when it's at Arthur Ashe. So this is the really hot time of year coming up for you guys, and I look forward to seeing it. And again, so grateful to get to discuss this and everything going on in the NFL with you, Alex Marvez. Truly nobody better to break it down with us than you. Thank you so much for your time, sir.
Thank you, Rick. Appreciate you.
Much appreciated, Alex. Love to have you back on to catch up with you about these subjects over time. And thank you.